Welcome to episode 8 of FemWonk. I'm your host, Katie Davey. Today we're joined by the Member of Parliament for Fundy Royal, Elena Lockhart. She's also the Parliamentary Secretary for Tourism, the Official Languages, and the Francophonie. We have a great conversation about her role as an elected official, as well as some of the other titles she holds. Hope you enjoy the episode.
Elena, thank you so much for joining me today. We're really excited to have you as a guest.
It's my pleasure. I always like the opportunity to have conversations like this. I think they're helpful and insightful, and I appreciate that you're taking the time to do this. So thank you, Kate.
Thank you so much. I myself grew up in St. John, so throughout my childhood, many of my family trips, whether it was weekend trips, Sunday drives, or what have you, were amazing spots in your riding. So I've spent a lot of time really, I guess, taking in the beauty and the vastness of your riding. So in that lens, I'd just actually like to ask you really how you ensure kind of diversity and inclusion when your riding is really so vast with so many great communities.
Well, that's a great question, and you're absolutely right. I think Fundy Royal is a beautiful area, you know, whether it's the St. John River Valley, Kennebecasis River Valley, or along the coast. There's so much to take in this area. And you're right, there are many, many communities as well. And quite frankly, I think that on a personal level has been one of the most fulfilling things for me is, my hometown is Suffolk. But the greater area has many communities that I knew too growing up. But to go into these communities and meet the people that makes them the vibrant communities that they are is really fulfilling to me. And I often say that it feels like my hometown grew by that much. And so learning about what makes each community special and what their needs are. I mean, there's some things that are very similar across communities, and then there's other things that are very unique. In some ways, I think I was very fortunate in the fact that I served on village council in the village of Norton from 2004 to 2008, because that really gave me the perspective of what it is like in a small community to try to build and to remain sustainable and infrastructure and put community services in place and that sort of thing. And so really I started working with the municipalities shortly after I was elected, because I already had that perspective, and it actually was part of my inspiration to run, because I knew that they really depended on federal support for a lot of the big projects that they required. So it's been really great. And as far as how do I keep connected with them? Well, I often laugh and say I do have an office in Hampton, but the reality is I work out of my car, put on a ton of kilometers from one area to the next, and really making sure that I'm on the ground and attending the events and communities that are important to people that live there.
Yeah, how long would it take to drive from one point, like from the furthest point to the furthest point you're riding? It must be a couple of hours.
Yes, it is. I mean, and some days it ends up that's what I do. So the riding goes from kind of Quispam Sis. If you go towards Fredericton, Waterboro is in my riding, and then all the way through to Albert County and, Elma and that area. So yes, it's a good couple of hours of driving. We do try to kind of cluster a day, but that doesn't always work out. Fortunately, with hands-free phones, we get a lot of work done in the car as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to play favorites here, but I feel like my partner would be angry with me if I didn't give a shout out to Alma, which I'm pretty sure, so he's actually from Toronto. I'm pretty sure that's his favorite place in New Brunswick. I brought him there a few summers back. We did the, hiking, and then of course, sticky buns, lobster rolls, and it was just an amazing day.
It's not a bad place to spend a day or two or three. It's a fabulous little community and a great base for a lot of other adventures in the area too. So it's fun.
So Elena, you're actually the first and only woman to represent the riding of Fundy Royal. How has that impacted your personal leadership? And are there any opportunities or challenges that you have based on being the first woman to represent the riding?
It's interesting. One of the things that I'm asked often is, you know, as a woman, why did you decide to run? And I find it's a curious question. And one day I kind of spontaneously answered it, but I like my answer, and I repeat it often now. And I suppose I ran for the same reason that every man ran before me, that I felt that I had something to contribute and some good ideas for this riding, and had the confidence to bring those forward. And keep in mind a lot that, and I don't know that I realized this before I was elected, that there's a lot of young women that it's important that they see another woman leader, just to open up the possibilities, whether it's becoming a member of parliament or leading an organization or career aspirations in the private sector. It's important, I think, for a young woman to see that there is a place at the table for them. And that's one of the things that I take the time to do when I'm in Ottawa as well. And if at all possible, if there's young women there that are visiting, to talk to them not only about the elected roles, politics, but also all of the other people that are there in the organization, and to make sure that they notice that there are many women there and that they do play very important roles. And so I'm very mindful of that. I think from a perspective of decision making and advocacy and that sort of thing, I'm also very conscious to seek out the voices of the most vulnerable in our communities, and that's not necessarily women, but I think as a woman that might be something that I'm acutely aware of as well. So sometimes we have debates and conversations and about issues, and what may be perceived as the most powerful or loudest voices are not necessarily the voices of the people that you know the policies are meant to protect. And so that's, you know, a perspective that I really try to take as well as I go through my work.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's so important. And I love to hear that, you know, you as an elected official are really taking the time to seek out those folks with lived experience. I think that that's just, you know, we can't have effective public policy without engaging the folks that we're trying to build the policy for. So,
well, Katie, I think it's, you know, you said it, but seeking out those voices. And I think that's important, because quite often in some of the public discourse that happens, you do need to seek it out. You know, it's not always the perspective that's front and foremost, but it is a perspective that often is quite important. And, you know, I really didn't come into this job as even what I would deem a feminist necessarily, but I've become acutely aware over the time that I've been working in the private sector and in this role, that there are some systematic barriers to women and to other minority groups in having their voices heard. And it does take an effort to go to and really solicit those voices.
I think it's really interesting as well what you kind of mentioned just at the beginning about how you do try to take the time to chat with young women and girls when you have that opportunity. One of the things that I think is so important is that kind of having those positive role models that look like you, right, in such a way. And one of the most powerful images that I always go back to when I think about that is during my time in the Premier's office, there's a wall of all of the past Premiers. And of course, it wouldn't shock you to know that all of those photos are of men. And what I find so interesting about that is, although nobody is necessarily saying outright to the young women that would come through that office that, you know, you can't be on this wall, what you unconsciously take from that visual is that, you know, there is a type of person that can hold this job. Here is 35 representations of that. And so I think it is so important for positive role models like yourself and like others to be trying to change that dial. Because I don't believe that's true, right? I believe that the best person can hold that role. And to what you said, there are sometimes those systemic barriers holding folks back from that. So I think, yeah, the positive role models and those visual cues are so important.
Yeah, and I've got a couple of things to say on that. I mean, first of all, I still face that. For instance, like when I decided to run, there were people that said to me, you know, oh, that's more for a lawyer type than a small business owner like yourself. Well, you know, obviously I didn't accept that, but I mean, people overtly will say these things to you. So you do need to recognize and that that's a choice that you need to overcome. You know, even now I go back and forth. You know, there's challenging times when you're in government, and I'm not sure whether to take it as a compliment or an insult when I see comments in social media saying, you know, well, she's a nice person, she's just green or new, and she doesn't understand, and she'll pick it up over time and get better. So, you know, there's tough decisions to be made, and I guess politically, maybe it is better if people think that I don't have a part in those, but the reality is that this has been one of the most empowering experiences in my life, because as a woman, and with many women colleagues, as sitting MPs, as parliamentary secretaries, and in our cabinet and government, it very much is the women that are actively participating in decision making, and I am a part of that. And you know, to have that minimized is you know, it's insulting by times.
Absolutely, I completely understand and completely can empathize with that. But like you mentioned, you know, you're a parliamentary secretary, so you're the parliamentary secretary for tourism, official languages, and the Francophonie. So how important has that role been, and how important, in your opinion, is that role for a New Brunswick MP particularly? There are, of course, those natural fits there.
Yeah, well, I think we're very fortunate in New Brunswick that we have the representation that we do in Ottawa around the decision-making tables. All of our MPs have been very engaged, and we see them in our communities throughout the province. We have two cabinet ministers, and three of us are parliamentary secretaries. We have Serge Cornet, who is he's defense now, but he has served in immigration as well. We have Matt DeCourcy, who is there in immigration, and then myself in tourism, official language, and Francophonie. So we, you know, collectively weigh in on a lot of topics that are pertinent to this area. In respect to the files that I work on, you know, Atlantic Canada right now, from a tourism perspective, is a real hotspot. It's hot on the international market, and in many countries of people that are traveling and looking for outdoor adventure and authentic experiences, Atlantic Canada really is kind of a exotic locale, so to speak, which is funny for us to hear as New Brunswickers, but it's true. Part of the beauty of me working alongside of Minister Jolie, who's from Montreal, we're working on a national tourism strategy right now, and so she brings that Montreal experience to the table, and I bring the rural experience. And I think as you see this tourism strategy come together, you'll see that one of the realizations that we've had is that the real opportunity for tourism actually is in our rural areas, because that is where you get the most authentic experiences in Canada, and really what people expect when they come to Canada. We have booming tourism in the country right now. A lot of it is centered around our peak seasons, summer, and around the main cities in Canada. And we're really working to make sure that we come up with a strategy that will drive visitors out into other areas of Canada, so that Atlantic Canada, for example, doesn't become a second visit when they come to Canada. It's actually the place that they visit the first time they come to Canada. And the reason why that's so important is because of the economic potential that it has for our province and for the whole region. When you think about it, a lot of our rural communities traditionally had depended on other industries, whether it be forestry or shipbuilding or what have you, that are a bit of a struggle. And tourism really is a bright light. And I think you mentioned Alma earlier. St. Martin's is another area that has huge tourism potential and really has tapped in on that, especially being a gateway for the Fundy Trail Parkway. And so there's wonderful examples here of areas where we know with a little bit of investment and confidence in the private sector to invest, that we could have people staying in this area longer, spending money, and essentially businesses being able to grow and employ more people. And so we're pretty excited about that. And I think, you know, I'm thrilled that I'm there to be able to help form that strategy.
Yeah, wow. Well, I really look forward to the strategy. It sounds like it's going to be great. So I'm going to just pivot back a little bit to, I guess, kind of gender and inclusive decision making. So you, of course, are part of the government that appointed the first ever cabinet with gender parity. From your perspective, how has that impacted both your role personally and, I guess, kind of broadly the decision making from your perspective?
I would say that it has had a significant difference in the way we operate as a government. And the reason being is that women, when you talk about why is it important to have women in decision-making capacity, the reason is because we approach things a little bit differently. Specifically, quite often women are more consultative and try to kind of come to consensus and look at things from different perspectives. And you know, that's often the role you play. And I know myself, I wondered if it would be seen as a negative, that it might be perceived as being wishy-washy, that I like to listen to all perspectives before I take a position on something. And it's been interesting to watch the impact that it has when you have kind of the critical mass of women that are also, you know, bringing those values to the table and in those conversations. And it brings a lot of life lessons with it as well. The other thing too is it doesn't matter how many women that you have. We certainly, support the idea, of course, but that parity is important. But I've seen it, obviously I don't sit in cabinet, but I've seen it in committee meetings where, you know, when you have, it's different if there's one or two women in the room versus half the women in the room. It really changes the tone of conversation and the dynamic, and for the better. And I think, you know, what I hear from my male colleagues as well is that they appreciate that perspective and the balance that it brings as well. And it just changes the tone of the conversation too. And I think that's very important. And, you know, it's been encouraging for me to watch it in action and see the difference that it can make. And then, of course, you know, you have those women to women relationships as well, where we probably talk to each other a little bit differently. And that's a positive as well.
I like that you brought up committee work, because I think that that's an interesting, I guess, kind of topic that sometimes gets brought up in this conversation. And you know, you talked about critical mass. I think we talk often about how you need to have 30% women at the table, and for that matter, that's really when you talk about diversity broadly. When you have a 30% at the table, that's when the decision making actually starts to be impacted. And so in the case right now, you know, it's fantastic that the cabinet has gender parity. However, the parliament doesn't, and the House of Commons, I think it's 27 or 28% women, which to your point there, that means at committee and at other stages, there's not that mass for that gender parity, or even I think 30% in a lot of cases. So although we've made lots of strides, I think still, hopefully this upcoming election in October will bring more women to the House. I keep wanting to say the legislature, but wrong level of government.
That's right. You know, we have a great organization here in New Brunswick, Women for 50%, and they have been doing tremendous work to raise a profile of the importance of having women in politics. And they've been recognized for that. And I really commend them. It's a group of women that have been in leadership roles and really want to put that message out there that there is support. And a lot of times that's what it is. I mean, one of the things that as women, we often want to be 100% prepared for an opportunity before we take it up, versus our male gender, who often say, that sounds interesting, I'll take up the opportunity, and I'm confident that I'll learn as I go. And quite frankly, the men have it right on that one, and we shouldn't be afraid to step up and get involved and learn along the way as well. You don't need to be perfect. Nobody is. But you need to have the confidence that you do have good ideas that you can bring to the table. And, you know, I go back often to my experience sitting on village council, Village of Norton. And at that time, I was only about 25, 26 years old. And there were people in the community that came forward and came to me and said, you know, would you consider putting your name forward for council? And I said, well, geez, you know, I was relatively new to the community and fairly young. And I was like, well, I'm not sure if I have a lot to bring to the table. And they were like, hey, you know, they were very confident that I did. And so I had the opportunity, I ran in the election. I won my seat in council, and it was a small council of four. We had the mayor was a woman, and we had two female councillors as well. So we had that gender parity in the council, and it didn't take very long till I did have the confidence to speak out and to share my mind, and really was validated by the other councillors. Like, the ideas I was bringing forward, they thought they were good ideas, which gave me the confidence to say, oh, well, maybe I do have something to offer here. And you know, you gain that confidence as you go, but you need to get involved to be able to do that. And that's why I really encourage people, like, find your way to get involved. And it doesn't have to be necessarily running in an election, but you can be around those conversations and participate in those conversations and build your confidence until you feel like you're in a place that you're confident enough to put your ideas forward. And I think we need to encourage more women to seek out those opportunities.
Could not agree more. Finally, I'll ask you, where can folks find you if they want more information?
Katie, you know, I love to hear from people on a wide variety of topics. And quite frankly, there's some topics that I wish I heard more from people. So anybody that'd like to reach me on this topic or any others that are pertinent to our area, they can always find me. I have a very active social media presence on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. You can reach out that way. Also, more traditional methods. My office is there in Hampton. We have an email, that sort of thing. Website's there. Yeah, I'd love to hear from people.
Fantastic. Well, thank you again so much for joining me today. I really enjoyed this conversation.
That's been great, Katie. Thank you. And thanks for the opportunity to talk about it. If I was to leave people with a final thought, it's that really having women in politics does matter. And the best thing that we can do as a community and a society is to support the women that do step forward, or the people that you think would be great representatives, and really give them encouragement.
I love the call to action to end the episode. Fantastic.
Thanks again for tuning in to episode 8. I can't believe we're already at episode 8. We're really excited about a few projects that we're working on. We'll have a week-long celebration for International Women's Day. We're learning by doing, and so I'll be looking into different tools, particularly for recording interviews. I know the audio is sometimes a bit spotty. And then also adding a blog and really just expanding the content and expanding what we're talking about here at FemWonk. So please stay tuned for what's next. Make sure that you subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you're listening to. And if you want to follow us on social media, we are at FemWonk.